We are going to talk about a video because PJ asked me to quite a while ago. But before we get into it, what do you do when you see a problem? How do you solve it? For instance, if you have a headache, how do you get rid of the headache? Well, I suppose you could go get a guillotine. Because if you don't have a head, then you wouldn't have a headache. It's what we normally do, though, is what we do is we find a pain reliever to lessen the pain while simultaneously trying to find the cause of it and to stop it that way. It's a slower method. It doesn't always work. But it's not one of those methods where you, the old cliche is throw the baby out with the bathwater, where you go overboard in answering it. There's a video that came out last month, it's almost exactly a month ago, that came out. Jefferson Berthke put out a video in January. He titled it, Why I Hate Religion But Love Jesus. And it went viral very quickly. The video is very well done. I watched it. Very good photography. Very smoothly delivered by a young man. Very appealing to the younger audience. It resonates with the youth. And it gives a message that appeals to many because it's against religion. But really, actually, if you go and look at the video and you watch what's being said, the reason behind the wide appeal is because of the video's vagueness. When you give a message, any message is given, there's really three messages going out. There's a message that the writer said. There's the message that the writer meant to say. And there's the message that actually the audience took from what was being said. And when something's written vaguely, what you end up happening is people hear what they want to hear. Not oftentimes what is actually said. In 2 Timothy chapter 4, and in verse 3, it says, For the time will come when they will not endure sound doctrine, but wanting to have their ears tickled, they will accumulate to themselves teachers in accordance to their own desires, and will turn away their ears from the truth, and will turn aside to myths. This then is the problem most people have. They hear what they want to hear. They follow after what they want to follow. And if it ends up being something as false, it doesn't matter to them. The answer to that, though, is what Paul then warns Timothy. He says, But you be sober in all things, endure hardships, do the work of an evangelist, fulfill your ministry. Focus on the truth. Other people will want to follow other things. They want to hear what they want to hear. The message of the truth is not always popular because it's not always what people want to hear. When you look at the poem itself, though, what it really does is it slams the idea of religion. That's the bulk of what this poem has done. It's done in a rap style when it was delivered, but that's what it was basically about. But it doesn't define what it means by religion. We can take what religion means in English. It comes from the Latin. It actually means to realign. That is to change your beliefs to align it to something else. Religion is a set of beliefs. It's a set of observances and a set of moral codes. When you combine that together, that's what really is meant by the English word religion. But what Mr. Berthke says in his video is his target's way too large. Because basically what he says is that all religion is bad. And all religion is not bad. Let's go back to our Bible reading that we had in James chapter 1. And look at verse 26. If anyone thinks himself to be religious and yet bridles not his own tongue, does not bridle his own tongue, but deceives his own heart, this man's religion is worthless. There are bad religions. People have various sets of beliefs, moral codes, and way they observe things that are bad. But notice the very next verse. Pure and undefiled religion in the sight of our God and Father is this, to visit orphans and widows under distress and to keep oneself unstained by the world. There is good, pure, undefiled religion. But the problem is, the poem doesn't distinguish the kind of religion being addressed. That leaves the field wide open for interpretation. And not surprisingly, if you go read most comments, most people assume he means all organized religion or religions that involve other people. If it's independent, your own personal one, that's fine. But if it involves other people, if you got to come someplace to go worship, you got to, you know, involve other people, that's bad. And that's the way most people take it when they read this, if you read the various comments. And I have read through a lot of them. And actually, the author did try to correct that gap. He does explain on his, in fact, on the video posting, if you go read on the side, he has this post on the side that says, a poem I wrote to highlight the difference between Jesus and false religion. In the scriptures, Jesus received the most opposition from the most religious people of his day. At his core, Jesus' gospel and the good news of the cross is in pure opposition to self-righteousness and self-justification. Religion is man-centered. Jesus is God-centered. This poem highlights my journey to discover this truth. So really what he's saying is, I'm just talking about bad, false religions. I'm talking about hypocritical religions. I'm talking about man-made religions. But that's not what he says in the poem. That's the problem. In fact, even the author realized that he had a communication problem, because I found in one interview of him, it says, in my context, I'm in Seattle, religion in shorthand is defined as legalism, self-righteousness, self-justification, he explained. Once I put out the video, I realized a lot of people in the nation didn't define it as that. And there's where the problem is. He says one thing, but people took it a different way. He understands it. In another statement, he said, for the first few years of walking with Jesus, starting in 2008, I had a warped, poor paradigm of the church, and it didn't build up, unify, or glorify his wife, the bride. If I can be brutally honest, I didn't think that this video would get much over a couple thousand views, maybe. And because of that, my points, theology, wasn't as airtight as I would liked. If I redid the video today, I keep the overall message, but would articulate, elaborate, and expand on parts where my words and delivery were chosen poorly. See, the problem is, when I looked, it had 18.5 million hits of people looking at it. It's very popular. And all in just 1 month. Less than a month, actually. And he understands. He has a problem. People took it differently from what he wanted the message to be. And though it wasn't his intention, the problem is that people have run away with a much broader definition than what he intended. What I wanted to do today is let's look at actually what was said, because, like I said, it's so popular, people have talked about it. Let's go look at what it actually says so that we can address the various points that are being brought out. And when I got done writing this thing, it was so long, I'm hoping if I don't finish this this morning, I'll figure out either I'm going to finish it tonight or next week here. But we need to go through some of the points that are being brought up. The poem starts out, the very first line says, what if I told you Jesus came to abolish religion? And that's the very first line that's being stated. And the problem is, there is no statement anywhere in the scriptures that says that Jesus came to abolish religion. He didn't come to abolish religion. He didn't come to abolish the Old Testament law that he lived under while he was on earth. In fact, and I think this is the passage he was alluding to, in Matthew chapter 5, and in verse 17, it says, do not think that I came to abolish the law or the prophets. I did not come to abolish, but to fulfill. For I truly say to you, until heaven and earth pass away, not the smallest letter or stroke shall pass from the law until all is accomplished. Whoever then annuls one of the least of these commandments and teaches others to do the same shall be called the least in the kingdom of heaven. But whoever keeps and teaches them, he shall be called great in the kingdom of heaven. Here then is the point that's being made. Jesus didn't come to tear out the law. He's not here to trample it. He wasn't here to get rid of it. He was here to fulfill it. And the statement is, if you want to be a great Christian when it comes to the end of the law, you first have to keep that law. He supported it. He upheld it. There were problems, though, during his day with the Jews and with how they were keeping that law. The problem was the Jews were talking one way and living a different way. But even in Matthew 23, where Jesus goes through all sorts of things that the Jews were doing wrong and telling the people very plainly how horribly they were keeping that law, I want you to notice a couple of things that he says in Matthew 23. Look down at verse 3. Therefore, all that they tell you, do and observe, but do not do it according to their deeds, for they say things and do not do them. Now notice what he starts out with. What they say, follow. They are teaching the law. So keep that. Just don't follow what they're doing, because they're not living the law. In verse 23, it says, woe to you, scribes and Pharisees, hypocrites, for you tithe mint and dill and cumin and have neglected the weightier provisions of the law, justice and mercy and faithfulness. But these are things that you should have done without neglecting the others. Is Jesus saying throw the whole thing out? No, he says there's weightier provisions of laws they're not keeping. They're not following. You need to do these things as well as keeping the small points as well. Both at the same time. Jesus fulfilled that law. He brought it to a completion. And at the same time, he established a new law. A new religion. In Matthew chapter 16 and verse 18, I say to you that you are Peter, and upon this rock I will build my church, and the gates of Hades will not overpower it. Jesus came to build his church, his religion. See, somehow people get this idea that all religion is bad. But Jesus came to establish a religion. That church that he established is one that he loves. Take a look at Ephesians chapter 5. Ephesians chapter 5 and in verse 25. Husbands, love your wives just as Christ also loved the church and gave himself up for her. Christ loved the church. He died for the church to establish it. But if we take another line from the poem, and by the way, I'm not going in order from the poem. I'm picking out points from it. He says, if religion is so great, why has it started so many wars? Now that's a topic that we've discussed here in the past. I'm not going to go back over, but it is a false conception. It's been a while, but did one on the immorality of atheism. Because that's one of the arguments atheists often make against the church is, well, there have been more people died in wars over religion. And you actually go back through the major wars in the world, more people died from wars were started by atheists than any other. Because you got Hitler's war, you got the deaths that were happening in Russia, the ones that happened in China. Far more people died in wars started by atheists. Have there been religious-based wars? Yes. In fact, some of the people that try to justify this problem says, well, look at all the wars the Muslims have been starting. Yes, but that's not Christianity. That religion does teach about war and supports wars. But that's not Christianity. What's being neglected is that when wars were fought in the name of Christianity, Christians as a whole condemned them as being wrong. That's in contrast with like the Islams who say war is promoted and to be supported and praised. And when they hear about other people fighting religious wars, they cheer. That's different. That's not the same thing. Another line from the poem says, but in the Old Testament, God actually calls religious people wars or whores. Well, actually, let's take a look at one of the condemnations. This is Jeremiah chapter 3. Because again, things are being taken out of context. Jeremiah chapter 3. And we're going to start with verse 6. Then the Lord said to me in the days of Josiah the king, have you seen the faithless Israel did? She went up on every high hill and under every green tree, and she was a harlot there. I thought, as she has done these things, she will return to me. But she did not return. And her treacherous Judah, sister Judah, saw it. And I saw it for all the adulteress of unfaithful Israel. I sent her away and gave her a writ of divorce, yet her treacherous sister Judah did not fear. But she went and was a harlot also. Because of the lightness of her harlotry, she polluted the land and committed adulteries with stones and trees. Yet in spite of all this, her treacherous sister Judah did not return to me with all her heart, but rather in deception, declares the Lord. What is God complaining about? Is he complaining about their religion? Yes. But what does he complain about? They're involved in idolatry. They stopped believing in me. They stopped worshiping me. They're going off and worshiping all these idols. And he called them harlots, called them prostitutes. Trying to do two things at the same time. Trying to hang on to God and hang on to their idolatry at the same time. These people were religious in the sense that they worshipped idols. It doesn't mean all religions were wrong. God was wanting them to come back to his religion. So this is a condemnation of idolatry, not what he claimed. Not what he actually stated. He also stated, religion might preach grace, but another thing they practice. And a little later it says, not realizing religion's like spraying perfume in a casket. What he's talking about is hypocrisy. But is hypocrisy caused by religion, or is it by the way people practice religion? Take a look again in Matthew 23. Matthew 23, and we're going to start with verse 27. Woe to you, scribes and Pharisees, hypocrites, For you are like whitewashed tombs, which on the outside appear beautiful, but on the inside they're full of dead men's bones and uncleanness. So you too outwardly appear righteous to men, but inwardly you're full of hypocrisy and lawlessness. Again, whose fault is this? Is it God's laws that caused this? Is the Old Testament the reason why these people were hypocrites? No, what Christ is condemning them for is not following the law. Not following God's religion, but in pretense, trying to follow. See, hypocrisy in Christianity is condemned. Go back to Matthew chapter 7. Matthew chapter 7 and verse 21. Not everyone who says to me, Lord, Lord, will enter the kingdom of heaven, but he who does the will of my Father who is in heaven will enter. You can't just claim to be a Christian and then go off and do whatever you want. Hypocrisy is wrong by Christ's religion, the set of beliefs that Jesus supports. You see, saying something is wrong doesn't stop people from doing it. Just because there's a stoplight, it doesn't keep people from running the red light. Somebody was asking me just yesterday, where does it say in the Bible that you can't marry again? It doesn't. It says if you marry again, you'll commit adultery. Does that stop people from marrying again? No. Some people don't care that they're in adultery. The real complaint is about the people, not the religion. And as the author did say well a little later in his poem, because there's a problem if people only know you're a Christian by your Facebook. And that's a true statement. Religion says slave, Jesus says son. Religion puts you in bondage while Jesus sets you free. Religion makes you blind, but Jesus makes you see. And that's why religion and Jesus are two different clans. There's a problem there. The problem is that it's sin, not religion, that makes people slaves and in bondage. Take a look at Romans chapter 6. Though there is a way that religion does bind too. We'll talk about that in a moment. Romans chapter 6. Starting with verse 12. Therefore do not let sin reign in your mortal body so that you obey its lusts. And do not go on presenting the members of your body to sin as instruments of unrighteousness. But present yourselves to God as those alive from the dead, and your members as instruments of righteousness to God. For sin shall not have master over you, for you are not under law but under grace. What then? Shall we sin because we are not under the law but under grace? May it never be. Do you not know that when you present yourselves to someone as slaves for obedience, you are slaves to the one you obey, either of sin resulting in death or of obedience resulting in righteousness. But thanks be to God that though you were slaves of sin, you became obedient from the heart to that form of teaching to which you were committed. And having been freed from sin, you became slaves of righteousness. Jesus frees us from sin, not religion. And he makes us slaves of him. We have to understand that. We have somebody that we're responsible to. But it is sin that's the problem of bondage. People just don't see the mind. It is sin and Satan who causes blindness. Take a look at 2 Corinthians chapter 4. 2 Corinthians chapter 4 and verse 3. And even if our gospel is veiled, it is veiled to those who are perishing, in whose case the God of this world has blinded the minds of the unbelieving, so that they might not see the light of the gospel of the glory of Christ, who is the image of God. Satan has blinded people through sin, so they might not see what the truth really is. And he goes on to say, so for religion, I know I hate it. In fact, I literally resent it, because when Jesus said it's finished, I believe he meant it. Now, these are the dying words of Jesus when he said it is finished. But they're being misrepresented. Because basically what he's saying is, Jesus said it is finished, saying it is done with getting rid of religion, by the context of which he says. Take a look at John 19, and in verse 30. John 19, verse 30. John 19:30. Therefore, when Jesus had received the sour wine, he said, "It is finished," and he bowed his head and gave up the spirit. Now, Jesus here was not talking about wiping out religion. He's not talking about killing off religion, which is what the words claim. Jesus had a task to finish. Go back to John 17 in verse 4. I glorified you on earth, having accomplished the work which you have given me to do. That was what Jesus said to God. I've brought you glory because I've accomplished the work you set out for me. There was a task that Jesus came to do. There was work that he had accomplished. In fact, in Romans chapter 10 and in verse 14, Romans chapter 10 and in verse 14, how then will they call on him in whom they have not believed? How will they believe in him whom they have not heard? How will they hear without a preacher? I wrote that down. I went up verse 4. For Christ is the end of the law for righteousness to everyone who believes. Sorry about that. What did Jesus came to do? He came to finish the law. No. In one sense, yes. But in finishing the law, did he abolish all religion by doing so? No, because part of his ending the law also came to establish a new one. He didn't leave the world without anything. Over in Hebrews chapter 12, and in verse 2, it says, fixing our eyes on Jesus, the author and perfecter of faith, who for the joy set before him endured the cross, despising the shame, and has sat down at the right hand of God, the throne of God. Jesus is the author and perfecter or finisher of the faith. Depending on your translation. He finished establishing a new law. He put an end to the old one and authored a new one. In fact, one could not be accomplished without the other. Going back to Romans, this time Romans 7, and in verse 4, it says, therefore, my brethren, you were also made to die to the law through the body of Christ, so that you might be joined to another, to him who was raised from the dead, in order that you may bear fruit for God. One law was taken away, brought to an end, completed, and a new law was established at the same time so that we might join to it. To say that it is finished is only about that, well, I finished the law. No, he's talking about the finishing the task that God put him to. And that task included, as part of it, bringing the law to an end, But another party came to bring about the new law at the same time. I'm looking at my notes and saying, there's no way I'm going to finish this in a reasonable amount of time. So I'm going to pause here. We're going to talk about some other aspects of what this poem is, but that's the main part of it. Is this idea that somehow Jesus came to abolish religion. It's not true. It wasn't with the author's intention either. If you actually read his writings and interviews, he understands that there is a religion. There is a religion of Christ. He may not understand fully what it is about, but he understands that it's something that we're supposed to support. We've got to be careful how we word things, because people will see what they want to see. And what we need to do is bring people back to the truth. The truth is Christ came to establish his church, that we might be set free from sin, to become his people. If there's anyone here today who is not yet a child of God, there's no better time than right now to put on Christ. If there's anyone here who is a child of God, would like to pray with their brethren on the behalf. Why don't you come forward as we stand and sing the song that's selected.